Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's fantastic to be in front of so many people from so many countries sharing the same common goal to produce safe, nutritious food. The last time that I spoke to a group as large as this was at a World Health Organization convention in Budapest, and it was for the 27 member states of the European Union and all of the European countries in the European continent outside the EU. And there was a row of booths at the back of the hall for the interpreters. They were simultaneously translating into 10 languages. So I stood up and I started off. I thought I was doing quite well till there was a panic at the back of the hall. I thought there must have been a fire. The head interpreter ran out and said, "Dr. Wall, stop! Stop!" And then he said, "What language are you speaking and who should be translating?" So, lest there be any confusion, for the next 20 minutes, I'm going to attempt to speak in English. We have people in this auditorium with many different competencies, and we've shared a lot of information over the last 2 days. Some of you are into livestock genetics. Some of you are into livestock nutrition. Some of you are into animal health, animal welfare. Nutrition creates the potential. Our genetics creates the potential, and nutrition delivers on that potential. But subclinical disease can undermine the gains from the other two. We have the fundamental shared goal to produce safe, nutritious food, and we've heard in the sessions on nutrigenomics of the inextricable link between human food and human health. And basically, that's the business that we're all in. We're in the human health business. Doctors and nurses, they're not in the health business. They're in the sickness business. There's a subtle difference. And the health business is a good business to be in, because if anybody asked you, "What is your most valuable asset?" it's not your business, it's not your farm, it's not your stocks and shares. It's your health and the health of your family. And many of us think we have problems, but when one of your loved ones is sick, it focuses you on the importance of health. And there's not one of us who wouldn't give the lotto winnings to have somebody who we love who's sick back well again, or somebody who's dead to return to us. So we're in a noble business, the health business. So you have a huge responsibility, and be proud. On my way to the All-Tech conference, as Dr. Lyons said, I first qualified as a veterinarian. And I worked at that for a few years. And then I thought I might like to work with people as well as with animals. So I changed tack and I became a medical doctor. And after a few years at that, I did an MBA with Damien to learn about business. So you might think that I'm some sort of a schizophrenic, but there's one common core denominator, and that's health. Animal health, human health, and company health. But I wasn't always a student, so I have to work to pay the bills. So my current job is I'm a professor of public health in University College in Dublin. And there we're engaged in a lot of research into the relationship between diet and health. I was the first chief executive officer of the Food Safety Authority of Ireland. This was an agency set up to oversee controls in the food chain, to restore consumer confidence in the safety of the food supply in the aftermath of mad cow disease. And the interesting thing about this agency, it was the first of the European agencies that was independent of agriculture and trade. Consumer health was paramount, and it was under the Ministry of Health. The next post was chairman of the European Food Safety Authority. And as Dr. Lyons highlighted, the European Food Safety Authority is a kind of akin to the US FDA. It does risk assessments to underpin legislation in the European Union and risk communication. Risk enforcement is done by the national agencies in each member state. Some of the food industry collaborations I'm involved with are, I'm a food safety advisor to Moypark. It's a major EU poultry processor with operations in Ireland, in England, and in France, and it's a subsidiary of the Marfrig Empire in Brazil. I'm a chairman of the Food Safety Advisory Panel of a company called Dawn Farm Foods. It's one of the leading suppliers of cooked and fermented meats in the EU. It produces 1,000 tons per week and supplies 48 countries, the leading supplier to Subway and Pizza Hut. And I'm the chairman of Independent Milk Laboratories to do composition and analysis and disease testing on an individual cow monitoring in the milk supply. In Ireland, we produce 1% of the global milk supply, but 15% of the global infant formula. And we have a grass-based system that we're very proud of, but infant formula is a precious commodity, and there can be no margin for error. We have in the university, in my school, the World Health Organization reference lab for Enterobacter sakisaki, an environmental pathogen that causes a lot of problems in the infant formula sector. Just in case you think I'm boring, I have a passion outside of work, and that's horses. So in addition to the day jobs, I'm chairman of the board of Horseport Ireland, which is the Irish Sports Horse Federation. And this is a picture of one of our stars, Keane O'Connor, and his horse. They had a bronze medal. They won a bronze medal in the Olympic Games in show jumping in London. And we're all set for the World Equestrian Games in Normandy to go better. And for those of you from Brazil who are here, we are on the road to Rio. And it's very interesting that in this, we have two athletes, the rider and the horse. And optimum nutrition is key because the margin between first, second, third, and last is often very little. Working in the agri-food sector is dull and boring, some people would say. Not so. Try an outbreak of mad cow disease. The first cow with BSE was identified in 1986. And between 1986 and 1996, the British government reassured the citizens that British beef is absolutely safe to eat. But in 1986, when they had to concede that there was a risk to human health, that shattered consumer confidence. Consumer confidence in the safety of the entire food supply. Consumer confidence in the ability of the regulators to protect that supply. And consumer confidence in industry's commitment to produce safe food. So this triggered a reform of food legislation in the entire EU. And those of you in the beef industry, no matter where you are in the globe, have been impacted upon by this. If you wanted to start a food scare, this had all the ingredients. It wasn't a bacteria, it wasn't a virus, it wasn't a parasite, it was something people hadn't heard of, a prion. Visions of cows eating dead cows, British government cover-up, pan-European epidemic that goes global. So there was nothing boring about this. It was like a science fiction story, only it wasn't a story. In 2001, we had an outbreak of foot and mouth in the UK. It cost 10 billion sterling pounds. Not a foodborne disease, but huge disruption in the entire supply chain and huge damage to consumer confidence. In 2008, we had a dioxin crisis in Ireland. Contaminated fuel in a feed dryer resulted in feed contaminated with dioxin being fed to pigs. But because of our inability to identify the contaminated pork after secondary processing, this triggered a global recall of Irish pork products. In 2009, we had the swine flu. And again, swine flu is not a foodborne disease, caused huge disruption along the entire supply chain. And currently, we have an avian flu incident in Asia, and again, it's not a foodborne disease, but KFC in China, consumption is down up to 30%. So consumer confidence is so important. Contaminated feed impacts on the entire food chain. Your jobs are so, so important, because if something goes wrong early on the food chain, the repercussions are huge. Everything the animals eat, we eat. In January 2011, the New Scientist proclaimed, "The curtain falls on mad cow disease." And that's the epidemic curve there. And the idea was, this is the end of the BSE saga. Everything can return to normal. There are still countries who have bans on beef from the European Union because of BSE. We're hoping all of these will now be relaxed. So is it all over? Has the curtain fallen on food scares? We can all relax. Major food scares are over. Not so. Every day on television, the newspapers, the social media, we read and hear about a chronology of food scares. Many, many outbreaks associated with Salmonella species, Listeria monocytogenes, E. coli 0157H7, E. coli 0104H4 that caused a huge outbreak in Germany, 53 deaths associated with bean sprouts, and the foods implicated. Processed meats, melons, bean sprouts. There is no food that escapes. We hear about a chronology of recalls. Recalls because of allergens, because of antibiotics, antibiotic residues, mycotoxins, arsenic, cadmium, and other heavy metals, PCBs, melamine. The list is endless. And the products implicated, vitamins and minerals for animal feed, compound animal feed, all the way to infant formula. And food fraud. Food fraud. This is where people substitute cheaper products for more expensive products. There's wholesale food fraud in the fish sector, where cheaper fish are substituted for expensive fish. Cheaper wines are substituted for expensive wines. Cheaper olive oil substituted for extra virgin olive oil. And the list goes on. The current food fraud issue that we currently have in Europe is a pan-EU horse meat scandal. We're still grappling with it. Basically, horse meat, which is cheaper than beef, was substituted for beef in processed meat products, and consumers who thought they were eating beef patties or beef burgers or beef prepared meals were eating horse meat. The problem wasn't covered in Ireland. There's a food fraud investigation team in the food agency. They identified food fraud every year. They identify Chinese honey masquerading as Irish, farmed fish masquerading as wild fish, cheaper varieties of fish masquerading as pollock. And this one, they found horse meat replacing beef in cheap processed products. Of all of their investigations, this one seemed to take wings. And so in Ireland, a lot of the products produced go to the UK. So the problems quickly spread to the UK. And in the UK, the horse is a companion animal. In many of the countries in Northern Europe, the horse is a companion animal bred for leisure or for sport. And the idea of eating it is semi-taboo. Not so in other jurisdictions, but you'll see what happened. Basically, an investigation was triggered across the EU, and it was discovered that in the 27 member states, the level of substitution of horse for beef in the cheaper end of the market varied from 4% of products to 12.5% of products. So this was wholesale substitution. And it was a fraud that was happening simultaneously, independently, in several jurisdictions. We thought that the EU supply chain controls were robust. After BSE, we reformed the entire legislation. We reformed oversight of the supply chain. And we thought we had a good model. But while we were looking for microscopic contamination, behind our back, there was truckloads of horse meat moving around the EU, masquerading as beef. There were huge profits to be made in this because of the price differential. Broken trust costs money, and some of our leading companies suffered. Tesco's is a major retail chain in the UK and Ireland. 300 million was wiped off their shares overnight because their own value, ground patties or burgers, were implicated, and 10 million burgers had to be recalled in the first 24 hours. This is the sort of publicity. There was a tsunami of adverse publicity. Of all of the food scares, this one really, really, really went for it in the media, and yet there was nobody sick. Because there was a combination of fraud, there was a yuck factor, people didn't want to eat horse, there was a deception factor, and so tens of millions of internet hits. Reputable companies were implicated. Findus is a Swedish company, a major company, would be up there, is a good company, has processed ready-to-eat meals. Nestle, you all know Nestle. IKEA is a Swedish company that makes furniture, but they pride itself in every one of its outlets globally. They have a restaurant and they serve beef, meatballs. So unfortunately, their beef meatballs turned out to be not beef, horse. Bird's Eye, major frozen food company. So it takes millions of dollars and years to build a brand, but a single incident can do irreparable damage. Since that we're in Kentucky, the land of the horse, I want to tell you about a very famous horse called the Findus Flyer. That company, Findus, from Sweden, makes beef lasagnas. So the beef lasagnas discovered that the beef in the lasagnas wasn't beef, it was horse. And this Findus Flyer originated in Romania, where he was slaughtered. He was a horse when he was in Romania. He then went for a gallop. He appeared in Holland, and in Holland he was substituted for beef. He now became beef. He was sold to a trader in Cyprus. He next reappeared in France. Two companies in France had him for a while. Then he went to Belgium, where he was manufactured into lasagnas. And then these lasagnas appeared in the UK, in Ireland. They next appeared in Norway. They next appeared in Sweden. And finally, the beef lasagnas, which were in fact horse lasagnas, reappeared in France. So the Findus Flyer, he'd be ready for the Kentucky Derby. He's that fit for all the exercise he's had. Farm to fork is an expression that we use in all jurisdictions. It's written into the legislation in many countries. And we have naively convinced the consumer that the food chain is a straight line. However, it's not a simple straight line. And even at the primary production level, agrochemicals, animal remedies, and animal feed are globally sourced. There's a huge disconnect between the final consumer and modern agricultural practices. The real global supply chain is more like this. So there's so many steps in the food chain now that there are many, many opportunities for things to go wrong. And when something goes wrong, finding the weak link is challenging. Can we have traceability in this global maze? Of course we can. Everything is achievable. But when we have to do recalls to be sure that we have the contaminated product, the recall is so broad that we have to take back a huge amount of unimplicated product. We can't do recalls fast enough in this climate of just-in-time delivery. And we can't do recalls quick enough, because many times when we get laboratory results with just-in-time delivery, the products and the ingredients have been implicated in finished product and often eaten, and this does huge damage to consumer confidence. So what is the new reality? Our new reality is we are not spectators looking on at the food supply chain. None of you are spectators. We are the players on the pitch, so it's up to us to perform. Grasping the new reality, we're anticipating and we're forecasting a massive population growth. Two issues, huge opportunities. There's going to be a huge growing middle class in Asia, South America, and Africa. Huge opportunity for us to sell our products. But also, there's a huge population growth in poor countries. Poor countries where there's people that will have to have access to food and affordable food if we're not going to have hunger and famine, a major challenge for us. Grasping the new reality is looking at, if we divert food to fuel, will we run out of food? We live in a global village. There's billions of tons of food traded every day, and often the health of a country's citizens depends on controls in operation in another jurisdiction. Often the health of your company depends on some of your suppliers in another jurisdiction. Commodity traders, they often sell more food in 5 minutes than a farmer would in a lifetime. That's a USA farmer. About 15 years ago, we had a problem in the European Union with contaminated cheap olive oil. It was contaminated with polyaromatic hydrocarbons. We were trying to track this contaminated product in the EU to see where did it go to. But I approached one particular major company and asked them, do you use this particular olive oil? Pomace olive oil, it was called. They said, we do. I said, do you get it from Spain? Says, we don't know. We buy it from a commodity trader in Rotterdam. Increasingly, the retailers are pressurizing their suppliers to give them product cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And you wonder, where will this eventually finish up? If the price pressure is too great, will people be forced to take shortcuts, to lower their standards, or include inferior ingredients? The longer the food chain, and the more players in the food chain, the more likely that one of them will be a shoddy operator or a criminal. Well, some people think they can recognize a criminal, but sometimes the white-collar criminals, they look the same as all of us. So one has to be vigilant. The regulators will protect our brand. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? In the current economic climate, many regulators in many jurisdictions haven't got the resources to enforce the legislation. And legislation that's not enforced counts for nothing. So we may have harmonized controls and harmonized legislation in many jurisdictions, but if the regulators don't check, many countries that you do business in, their regulators don't have the laboratory capacity, or the laboratory capability to have good oversight of the supply chain. Often, whenever there's a crisis, how the regulators react can hugely impact on your brand. And often there's many approaches to solving a problem. Some can do minimal brand damage, and some can do major brand damage. And often, the regulators, when there's a crisis, they're in control, and they see this as an opportunity to build their brand as your brand is going downhill. So it's very important, in whatever jurisdiction that you're in, that you build a relationship with the regulators in peacetime. Another thing that often, whenever there's a crisis, the regulator's response is to bring in new legislation. But often the crisis was caused by a criminal, who didn't pay any attention to legislation. So when you bring in new legislation, all you do is cripple the compliant. And if you raise the standards too high, often you force production and manufacturing to another jurisdiction where they have lower standards of food safety, lower standards of animal welfare, lower standards of employment law, lower standards of environmental standards. And so therefore, you're exposed in this situation. Many people in the food industry are worried about over-regulation and the cost of compliance. But this is a reality that we'll have to live with. And we have to engage with the regulators to ensure that we have regulations that are proportionate to the risk. But we're never going to see self-regulation, because light regulation in many jurisdictions led to the demise of the banking service and many of the economic collapses that we have. The anatomy of a disaster, often minor problems, if they're left unresolved, have the potential to become major disasters. In 2000, the Concorde crashed. 113 people were killed. And basically what happened was a previous plane that landed on the runway, piece of metal fell off. And when the Concorde took off, that piece of metal shot up into the fuel tank. So a routine runway sweep was not carried out, and it led to the Concorde crash. Here's another one in the US. In 1986, a space shuttle crashed because of a leaking rubber seal. Simple, $5 rubber seal brought down a space shuttle. Policies and procedures are essential. Many companies have lots of policies and procedures, and if the policies and procedures are on a shelf, they count for nothing. It's culture and practice that's the most important thing. So here's a guy, and he's piloting this plane. He has a policy and a procedure, but he just doesn't know where the parachute is kept. So it's day-to-day practice. Food safety has to be like putting on your safety belt, something that you do instinctively. It's not something you do when you're having an audit. The power of social networking, we've heard in several sessions, but the consequences for brands and reputations in this new climate of global media. If food is distributed globally, media is distributed globally only much faster, 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. Just press send. Truths or lies disseminate to millions in seconds. So the idea that you can manage the media in a crisis, that you can protect your brands in this situation, not so. Tweeting, we have tweets. Tweeting is just fun, not so. Not so at all. This is a tweet that just a fictitious tweet that somebody sent out. Two explosions in the White House. Barack Obama's injured, and the stock exchange reacted before they had time to check it. 3 minutes later, 200 million wiped off the stock exchange before it was corrected that it was untrue. The media have their own challenges. Here a producer is shouting at his journalist, fill that space with something. We need news. We need news. So is it more important to be first with the story than to be 100% correct? Often the media doesn't want to miss the scoop. And often the conventional media feed off the social media without time to verify the story. Many companies do lots and lots of testing, thousands and thousands of tests to check their product. And often, if you're in a low-risk situation, all your tests are negative. You can relax, and possibly you don't have the highest-powered individual monitoring this. But then what happens? Are you prepared when you get one positive result? You can be lulled into a sense of security by a chronology of negative results. The anatomy of a reputational disaster. Minor mistake is uncorrected. It's only a minor mistake. But then a subsequent problem compounds the error. Half-hearted correction or lack of recognition or denial Oh, it couldn't be us. We've never had a problem. In fact, several times I've had to tell company executives that their company has been implicated in a food scare. And it's like telling a parent that their son or daughter is a drug dealer. Initially, they're just shocked. They don't want to know. But denial isn't the solution. When it's too big to ignore, we'll have to hide the truth. We'll keep our own checks in-house. We'll try and cover it up. We'll try and fix it ourselves. And finally, when things get out of control, it's total acceptance. So this is from the Wharton Business School of Research. And so it's a research into a lot of reputational disasters. But there's lessons to be learned here. A food crisis is not just about safety. It's about emotions. Fear. Consumers are afraid. People are afraid. They're afraid their family will get ill. And people can overreact. Politicians, they're afraid if they're not aggressive that they won't get elected in the next election. So politicians could say anything. And they love the media. And they like to get the publicity. This is an opportunity to get publicity while your brand is going down the tubes. The media are afraid of not getting the story because they're in a competition for attention. The regulators, they're afraid of getting it wrong. And so often the regulators will go over the top. And at the end of the day, they can say, well, I was taking no chance with consumers' health. I put public health before profit. To hell with the consequences for brand damage. Scientists are under pressure for results. The media wants the results in 15 minutes. You cannot say, I'm a scientist. Come back to me in 3 days. I'm doing a bit of research and I'll give you the results. Or come back to me in 6 months and I'll have the answer for you. Businesses are afraid of losing customers. And greed comes in. Companies seeking competitive advantage. So one company's in trouble, the other companies jump into the ring and exaggerate the risk. And finally, nations seeking competitive advantage. Often the response of one country when another country is in trouble is to ban everything from that country. It's an opportunity to settle old scores. There's a lot of politics in food safety. It's much cheaper to prevent a crisis than to try and recover it. Recovering from a crisis burns cash. You need a plan. And there's a slogan up there in the crisis management room which said, when you hear the thunder, it's too late to build the ark. And you heard Pierce Lyons say, there's somebody in charge, we have a plan and the plan is working. But you need to have your plan and your plan has to be tested. You got to be proactive. It's too late. Too late when you hear the thunder to build the ark. Grasping perspective. This is what the food chain looks like. You can't protect the entire food chain. You cannot. So we have to say enough's enough. We've had enough food scares. We've had enough food recalls, enough outbreaks of food poisoning. We've had enough food fraud. And we've enough adverse publicity because the food supply chain has probably never been safer. We're living in a time when we're so lucky that most of us have access to good quality food and a broad range of quality food, and food is available out of season in every country. The middle of winter, you can have your raspberries, your strawberries. We have to say enough is enough and stop this. What can you do? You can protect your link. And if everybody protected their link, the food chain would be robust. It's a fully integrated system we need. You want to control the risks within your business. Process controls. Safe animal feed is linked to safe food animals, safe human food. And the system will work. Everybody has to play their part. It is about paying attention to detail. There is no room for shoddy operators. None of you want to be in this position. You're on TV. The interviewer says, explain to our viewers why you sold contaminated product. What are you going to say? You've got 20-second soundbite. That's all they're going to give you. One CEO from a reputable company said, It wasn't us. It was one of our suppliers. You can't use that as an excuse. You sold the product. You are responsible. So this is a huge message. Your brand is as secure as the standards of your weakest supplier. Ask yourself one question every day. Would you trust your suppliers to pack your parachute and jump out of a plane? If you wouldn't trust them to do this for you, are you trusting them with your brands and your reputation? We say, in God we trust. Everybody must show us the evidence that their product is what they say it is. And then we'll retest and audit. Procurement policies are key. Grasping the new reality. We always hear people say, our staff are our greatest asset. But untrained staff or incompetent staff can be your greatest liability. And they can be everybody from your office staff to the very basic staff that are in charge of cleaning and sanitation in your processing facilities. Your weakest staff member could bring you down. Now we have the capability to barcode the bacteria in the patient, track it back, find it in the food, find it in a retail or catering outlet, find it in the processors, and find it on the farms and trace it all the way back to the mills. Pulse field gel electrophoresis is commonplace now. The regulators use this tool. They call it forensic microbiology. Well, what can you do? You can use the same tools that these disease detectives are using. When you find a pathogen in the environment of your production facility, is that the same pathogen we found 3 months ago? Is that the same pathogen we found in another part of the facility? Is that pathogen the same pathogen we found with supplier A? So basically, you need to understand the microbial flora of your own plant. And often when there's a crisis and CDC in Atlanta identify the pulse field pattern of a bacteria and your company is implicated, if you can say, well, hold on a second, we have been monitoring using forensic microbiology. We have never found that pattern in our production facility. Use the tools that the regulators are using. Increasingly, the analytical chemists are getting better and better. They can detect lower and lower levels. This is particularly challenging. One time we were at parts per million, then we went to parts per billion, parts per trillion, and now they're talking about parts per quadrillion. This is a huge challenge to communicate this to the consumers because they don't want toxic chemicals in their food supply, let alone whether it's parts per million or parts per quadrillion, they don't understand. But what can you do? You can use these very tools. The sensitivity of these tests mean that with composite sampling, we can much get a better return on our testing investment. So we should use in our armory the same tools that might be used to wreck our brands and reputations. This is a very interesting concept now, early warning. Would you share your results with your competitors? Because when you get a food scare in a sector, you may not have caused it, but the whole sector will come down. Industry sharing results of audits and private testing with each other, which are competitors, or maybe you'd share them with the trade associations. Would you share them with the regulators? In the horse meat scandal in the European Union, several companies had identified the issue 6-8 months before. There's no obligation to share your results with anybody else, but had they shared, they would have prevented the crisis. So this is something to go away and think about. Are there some things that you should share? People are afraid sometimes to share with the regulators in case it will draw the wrath of the regulators down upon them. Safety is not a gamble. Risk, it's not rocket science, food safety. So this risk can be managed. But if you don't manage it, then you're playing Russian roulette with your brands and reputations. It's a core responsibility of company leaders to manage the risk. It's not that girl in the white coat in the quality assurance department. Food safety must come from the very top of the company. This is a boardroom table of a global food company. If you were a camera and a spy in the sky listening to the board meeting, what are they talking about? Turbulence in the capital markets, foreign exchange fluctuations, key competitor strategies, the next merger and acquisition that will deliver double-digit growth. Does food safety feature at the boardroom table? Rarely. Often it only appears when there's a problem. But the safety culture starts here. Is safety on the agenda? It should be. And leadership in quality, safety, and innovation should come from the very top of the company. The ingredients for success for our sector: confidence. Consumer confidence is crucial. And consumer confidence is a fragile thing. In addition to consumer confidence, we need to be confident in our businesses. If you're able to drive on, drive on. Confidence in our products and confidence in ourselves. We need to be competitive because we're in a global competition. We've got to be efficient in our production systems. And we've learned over the last 2 or 3 days about how some systems are far more efficient than others. We've got to be creative. We think that we can grow our market share. What about the perception that primary agricultural output is unhealthy? Saturated fats, blood pressure, cholesterol, getting your arteries clogged up. Red meat and cancer. We've got to be creative and use the latest science to address the consumer issues and the health issues and rectify them. And we have the science to do that now. We've got to cooperate and collaborate. We're interdependent in this global supply chain. We've got to cooperate and collaborate with regulators so that we get regulations that are proportional to the risks and not crazy. Common sense-based regulations will improve compliance. There is no room for shoddy operators. There is no room for illegal practice, and we should not tolerate it. Anybody that's engaged in illegal or substandard practice needs to be culled from the herd. And finally, we need to control the supply chain. We've heard a lot about that over the last 2 days. And Dr. Lyons talked about minerals and that Alltech reject 31.5% of the minerals they check. The question you have to ask is, what happens to the stuff Alltech rejects? Where does that go? If we all do our jobs right, address food safety issues, address hunger and the waste of good food, and address diet-related disease, she could be speaking at the Alltech Symposium in 2040. One final take-home message for you. This is the last slide. When you go home, if somebody asks you what business you're in, don't forget to tell them. You're in the human health business. Thank you.